Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the May 28 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Mike Zuzulow of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities from Watseka, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson in Champaign County. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our discussion always begins with a list of topics to cover. We'll start with you, Jackie Vakes.
Oh, I've got all kinds of things, Todd, you know, from corn, beans, and wheat, of course, to OPEC coming out next week, U.S. and world economy.
Mike Zuzulow.
No, that sounds good to me. You know, the 2010 time period, Greece stuff, bean-corn ratio, things like that, that'd be fine.
Merrill Crowley.
I had world economies down as well. World weather, how that might affect the crop, especially in regards to how it might lead the wheat market. And then what other fundamentals we might be looking for other than weather, and I know the EPA now is right on top of the list, that might change this from a bear market to a bull.
Okay, so I want to talk about something that we don't normally talk about very much, but what's happening with feeder cattle?
That's a good question. When you looked at the feeder cattle today, you know, they just totally ignored the fact that corn was higher. And I think one of the things, Todd, that we have to recognize, whether we like it or not, when you look at feeder cattle and you look at hogs, those are cash-settled markets based on 7 days of weighted average with the cash index. And so they're in a very attractive market for speculative money. And I think you saw an awful lot of short covering today. And if you look at a feeder cattle chart, you can pretty much look at the ranges that it trades and recognize, you know, that when it reacts in a way that's totally opposite of what you would expect from a fundamental market, it's just probably cash movement, you know, money flow, basically.
So not cash actual movement in the countryside, but real live dollar bills or cash that's moving around. It's just a spec move, so it's unhooked, relatively speaking, to the market?
Pretty much. I mean, you know, we did see that, you know, the futures now today went from being a dollar behind the cash index at 222 to $3 ahead of the cash index. And you in times past, anytime we've seen it surpass the cash index, it wasn't very long, and we just did a reverse on the market. So we'll see once what happens. You know, ever since they raised the limits to $4.50 on feeder cattle, it's really been an attractive market to be able to sell calls in on rallies and sell puts in on pullbacks.
So there are ways that producers, cattle producers, can take advantage of this marketplace then?
Oh, there's no question. There's a lot of guys who raise live cattle and have paid way too high a price and have been trying to add back by doing exactly that, you know, using option premium to try and just add to the bottom line.
Anything else from the other two of you on this marketplace? Mike Zuzulow, maybe?
Yeah, I would say, you know, the placements numbers being lower than the trade estimating in the last cattle on feed report has probably breathed some short covering by those funds that Jackie's talking about into the marketplace. Kansas, Nebraska, Texas, all three of the biggest states for feeders, Todd, were down in placements versus last year. And I think this makes sense because the pasture is just so much better in these three areas. And so I think it shouldn't have been a surprise to the trade with such a green, lush environment out here compared to the last 3 years. We had these three big states go ahead and hold back. Now, I think that ends up being maybe a negative feature to the market as we see the August feeders go off the board. In fact, I kind of feel like at this stage that feeder cattle will make their high first out of the cattle and hog complex, unless the hogs get some more bad news, or unless the avian flu actually pushes hogs up sharply higher by it expanding into the broiler market. But I think by the time the August feeders go off the board, hedgers probably will want to have some hedges in place with the idea that that may be the top for maybe even the calendar year. And I'd say one last thing, the retail featuring issue has been so much more favorable for the beef, for ground beef in particular, against the pork and against the poultry in almost every single advertisement that I've seen since March. And the Memorial Day holiday had, both on the east side of the Mississippi and the west side of the Mississippi, really a lot of ground beef out there competing effectively against the pork. It says the retail, restaurant, grocery people, they want ground beef still, and the consumer wants ground beef. And so these things are also probably working into the price right now as well, I think.
Mike, I want to stay with you, but let's transition to corn and soybeans. I believe that all three of you were on panels at some point, I think, with Mike. Those who listen to the shows regularly know that he had been talking about this year being analogous with 2010. This is one of the items, Mike, that you would like to take up. When you look back at those numbers, that bottom came later in the summer than we currently are at this point, and we're now at the bottom end of the trade for both corn and soybeans in both the spot month and new crop months. Where do you think we are, and how does your view of this marketplace look as it compares to 2010?
Yeah, I mean, I think the analogy is still there. The trend is still there. I think at the end of the last week before the holiday, we were within 3 cents of the November 2010 price at the end of the week last week. And I think this blends together pretty nicely, at this point anyway, why this market is unable to hold together when it rallies, the grain market, that is. And I think, A, current supplies are adequate in the bears' minds and the people that are short the market right now. And so you only get short covering rallies, not new longs coming in. And I think that is in and itself because mostly, Todd, because the future demand remains so uncertain because of the currency market. And here again, we've got some real similarities with the 2010 market. And, you know, I have to say from a compliance standpoint that, you know, we are taught in the futures industry not to bank on spreads, not to bank on seasonals and cycles. Don't lead that potential client or a subscriber into the mindset that this is going to happen. This is, like you say, an analogy. The trend is there. There's a lot of things that are different versus 2010, but right now it is still pretty uncanny in my mind. And, in fact, I was looking at the wheat, the S&P Agriculture Index, the S&P 500, the VIX, the dollar, before we went on air for this week's Commodity Week, and we're within 30 cents of the July 2010 low in wheat. We're within 5% of the low in the S&P Goldman Sachs Agriculture Index, while the S&P 500 is up 211% versus its low from July of 2010, and the VIX is down almost 50% from its level in July 2010. And so I think we have bred into this market the idea that the equities deserve the premium, the VIX deserves super low volatility, while at the same time with this stronger dollar, which feeds a feedback loop into these equities and VIX numbers, that at the same time these commodity markets are preparing for 2010 slowdown, recession, and deflationary pressures. And I think this is where, if the 2010 market's going to happen again or come close to happening again, we really need to see a shift by the time we get to the end of June.
And so kind of that round bottom and then turning back up. Merrill Crowley, as you think about the dollar and its strength, especially related to wheat and the world market, can you see some potential eventually for this market to turn just on the dollar on its own?
Well, I think the dollar is at a critical level right now. We've hit the 618 retracement, and we've started to back off a little bit today. Longer term, I really think the dollar is going to try to make another move at the highs, possibly move up to 104 before breaking back off. what all is going to come through to make that happen. I'm not exactly sure. As you know, I'm a little more technical than I am fundamental, but we have some problems with the Shanghai today, dropping 6.5%. Nothing to be concerned of until you get more like a 10%, but that market is overinflated. And you have things going on in Europe. If they settle the problem with Greece, you'll see more money head back into the euro versus the dollar. So either one of those items could change the dollar in either direction. I think we just wait and see. If we take out the recent low around 90, I think it's around 94 or something, or if we take out the high of 101.
And are you of a mind of which direction that might be? We're at that Fibonacci number retracement at this point, so there would be a pretty good cap, I would suppose, on the market for the dollar at this time.
Like I said, it's been kind of in low man's. My thinking is it's going to go up. I think with some of the current things going on, the uncertainties in the economies, I think it's going to go higher before it goes lower.
Fibonacci numbers are fairly important in the marketplace. Dan Zwicker on Thursday afternoon talked both about the 62% retracement in the dollar, that to the upside, 62% retracement in corn, that to the downside. Jackie Vakes, we're seem to be at the precipice of a change in the market, but not really clear as to which direction that change will be. What do you think?
Well, I think, you know, a number of things have to be looked at. You know, we've got a lot of rain falling with the implications that we might find some more feed wheat, which would be negative corn. And some of that, I believe, is built into the market. Exports are certainly, we're at 67% of the USDA expectation. We're 73% through the marketing year. And I think the bigger thing, and it was mentioned earlier, avian bird flu, and whether avian bird flu, now, you know, this week they said they thought they had it under control in the 4 months. Now we've had two more outbreaks since then. And, you know, like you and I talked yesterday, it's affected 40 million birds. As long as it stays out of the broilers, we'll be okay, corn-wise, I think. But it's a circumstance where I would have to say that the weight on the market is more to the downside, but it'll probably be more range trading just until we find out, did we lose a bunch of acres or didn't we lose a bunch of acres? If we turn out not losing very many acres, then I believe, you know, we will travel down and probably test some of the trend lines that are down here, you know, in the 440s the 330s and the 340 area.
You mentioned acreage. That's an important function that will happen at the end of the month of June. On the 30th day, USDA will release its acreage report, updating the impressions that farmers gave them back in the month of March. Most, Merrill, are thinking that there might be fewer corn acres and more soybean acres. Just in your area around Watseka, Illinois, did most people get everything planted as they thought they might?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say everything looks pretty well planted, and we got some nice rains after most of them had finished up. There was seemed to be a push on this weekend to get the beans in the ground, but from everybody I talked to, it looks like that's been done.
And then if we move to Atchison, Kansas, we probably get much wetter, and they're waiting not very patiently, I would think, at this time. Mike?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think this is a really different spring than what we've experienced the last third spring now that we've been out here, Todd. And I took a drive during the holiday weekend in eastern Kansas, western Missouri, extremely saturated, and talking to producers about the crops this week and during the weekend holiday time period, very eager to get back in the fields. I think they're very nervous that they will not have enough time to replant corn, that they'll only have enough time to get their beans in, because they're at a stage now where they're going to have to decide one versus the other, and I think they're going to try and get their beans in so that they can probably get a more normal above average yield potentially, whereas if they go in and rip up some corn now, they may do more harm than good. So I think you're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul at this point. This is the one thing that really puzzles me, as it does this time of year every year, and I know we didn't get weekly corn conditions for the current week last year at this time, but if you move forward a week to the June 1 number, I was really struck that the USDA put us in Kansas at around 79% good to excellent And I think I went back and looked on June 1 of last year, good to excellent was only at 41%.
Mm-hmm.
I would say this part of Kansas, at least, which is where most of the yield is made in the corn crop, it would be exactly the opposite, that this has been a really rough road and not as nearly as good a spring as we've been used to.
Jackie, I know that you have made phone calls across Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, a good portion of the U.S. What have you been hearing?
Well, it's too dry out in the east, I can tell you that much. I had guys calling today saying, please send us rain. Of course, way too wet down in the south. Texas is just a nightmare, basically, is what it is. And that, I think, is going to affect Milo and the availability of Milo. When you go, Mike is talking Kansas, western Kansas, I got a number of big guys that are 25 to 30% done on corn. Don't plant any beans. And they're very, you know, they're very antsy and unhappy at this stage of the game. I've got guys up in Nebraska, though, that are just the opposite. I called and said, you know, how are you being affected? And they plant, this particular guy plants a lot of acres. And he said, well, you know, if you consider 3/4 inch of rain over 24 hours coming straight down as a lot of rain, then I guess we're in trouble. But he said we couldn't have had more perfect rains. And they're like due north of well, I shouldn't say due north, but north and a little west of Omaha, basically, is where they are. And so, you know, I think the rains have been generally relentless in following almost the same path all the time lately. You know, they just, where they've been, they've just been deluged, but where they haven't, they've gotten some very timely rains and some rains that have really benefited the ground and the crop. I think the guys out, you know, Kansas, Nebraska are just really conflicted. You never want to turn down rain when you live in those areas. And yet, you know, you wish you weren't getting quite as much sometimes.
Merrill, we can have a lot of discussion, but the bottom line at this point with new crop corn and soybean prices is that we're on the lows. Cash prices are very low, and that for producers, they're likely to lose money, especially on cash rented acres this year. What can or should they be doing at this point to try to mitigate any more losses that they might be facing?
Well, they'd have to wait and see if we get a little bit of bounce off, say, the EPA report. I'm of the idea that we are getting fairly close to figuring all this risk, I shouldn't say risk, supply, negative supply ideas into the market. I just read where they're talking 170 bushel corn. As soon as you hear that, you know, it gets figured into the market pretty quick. And so stuff I'm looking at is looking for cycle lows coming due and due now. And if that's the case, then you're looking for a market that's going to, on average, rally about 21% from the lows. So that's about 70 cents on corn and about $1.75 on beans. So right now, I guess I'd be a little bit uneasy about selling the market. What a guy could do is sell some calls with the idea, you know, that if the market rallies and takes those and exercises those, at least you have some pricing done a little higher into the market.
Mike, that plays right into where you think you are on the 2010 comparison, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I would say to you, if that 2010 analogy is correct, and I like the idea of doing more paper positions at this stage because you can be a lot quicker footed if you need to make a decision to jump out on some type of change in the market sentiment, whether that's because the euro does resume its move back up and the yen does too because Greece heals up all of a sudden, or whether the opposite happens and you can, you know, take advantage of the downside. But I would caution that the implied volatility levels on both new crop corn options and new crop bean options are running in the low to mid-20s, and that's not super high. So when you're selling options, you really want to do it like futures, you know, sell the high volatility, buy the low volatility. And so those short options, especially a short call position on a rally, and I think Merrill's 100% right, they just have to be monitored really closely because of the volatility play. And if the market direction would change and that would accompany a volatility increase, which I think that would make logical sense, you'd want to be very quick and orderly about not letting that position turn into a short futures position on you?
You know that I like futures, but I also like options. And one of the big advantages of options at this point in time is that you can purchase deeper in the money options. And so if you look at using short dated, you know, you could go in and you could buy a short dated 420 put, not cheap, and sell a couple of the December higher price calls. Basically, if you went in at a $4 call, you'd probably still have to put about 20 cents into it. So you might want to go to a little lower strike price. But you look at that. The one thing I like about the short dated is that you can end up with a short December futures, you know, if you would be exercised, if you allow it to go into exercise. And so most guys at this point in time, I don't think would be too sad about that. You just have to control how much premium you put into it. But, you know, that's the big advantage of learning how to use options and how to exploit, like Mike is talking about, exploit volatility, take advantage of market trend and all of those types of things to be able to add back to sales, improve sales, but, you know, always being aware of the risks that you have. I look at this and say, you know, okay, so we're at, you know, we're down at 370 on December corn. Guys, to sell the futures at 370, I'm not interested in, to be absolutely honest with you. I'd like to be able to protect something if I'm going to do it that gives a guy a much better opportunity. And so I'm going to sit down and explain the risks, figure out where you're going, because, you know, the risk of us going lower is certainly there.
Another thing, Todd, we've been seeing or hearing that you're starting to see commercials do some buying into this market. And I would think if you're a feeder of grain or an end user, or even if you wanted to maybe have more confidence as this thing rallies to make sales, you do have an excellent opportunity to buy, say, $4 calls right around the 10-cent mark. And if the market rallies 70 cents from this level, you'll have the courage to sell the cash. And once you sell the cash, you might be able to pop the call off, you know, and sell the call back and take a little profit from that, or keep it on in case the weather changes. So if you're aggressive, I think you would look at start buying some of these calls to either protect your feed needs or maybe set yourself up for being able to make sales after we see a rally.
Merrill, I think it was you that mentioned we should discuss the world weather as it relates to commodity production. I haven't heard much about problems around the planet other than with a hard red winter wheat crop here in the United States. Is there something you've been watching?
Well, India. There's been a lot of talk about India going to one large heat wave. And if you'll look up El Nino, India is one of the places that gets dry and warm from an El Nino, along with Australia. And it's my understanding they had some pretty good rains that hurt their wheat crop, at least the wheat quality, which would take it out of feed usage. So it might be pushing India into a situation where they may need to come into the world market, and it might stimulate the demand for wheat. Also with Australia, if they have problems with their wheat, there again is another stimulation because of a lack of supply. And I think any market that you look at or any decent rally you get, if you look back in history, you'll see the wheat market make a low, and then roughly, I mean, it varies, but on average it seems like a month later you see the other markets make a low. And as you know, wheat made a low here. If it can hold that, then you would look for corn and beans to make a low again in the June time period. So in my mind, the problems you're seeing with India, the problems you could easily see with Australia, there was one, and it was only one out of 11, where China saw problems from an El Nino, where they had extreme dryness in the north and extreme wetness in the south of their country. So they're not out of the woods either. So I think the setup right now in general for the world weather is that problems could very easily occur in other places, which, you know, we all tend to monitor our backyard. And I think, you know, if you continue to monitor your backyard and look at the great conditions we have here, all of a sudden, just like we saw 2 weeks ago with the wheat market, boom, it jumps up. And I'm not too sure that's not going to be a scenario for markets when they recover, is you see some shorts cover, then the computer trading hops in, and the next thing you know, you're boom, 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 and you're up 30 cents in wheat, you're up $3 in feeder cattle, and who knows what it's going to do with corn and beans.
Jackie, you mentioned OPEC. Why?
Well, you know, the last time that they met was November, of course, and at that point in time, everybody thought that, you know, they were going to reduce production because prices had gone so low. At this point in time, most people don't expect them to reduce production below that 30 million barrels per day, that they'll continue to keep the pressure on. But, you know, it always creates an issue. And for us, you know, when we're talking about world economies, the fact that we have a lower oil price than what we had a year ago at this time when it was over $100 a barrel has been a big help. And they still are struggling, no matter how you look at it. And so I think that if anything would come in, they'd cut production, crude oil prices jump up because crude oil is priced in U.S. dollars everywhere in the world, could be a real negative to the world economy eventually. At this point in time, it's been a positive because we've been lower. And so I think we have to be mindful of that, and we have to pay attention to what's happening.
Okay. A couple of things as we wrap up. I think that I've got this right. With Mike, it's pretty simple because I've seen the 2010 analogy years. And you're thinking probably a little, we've got some time yet to go lower and then to turn. Tell me if that's wrong. And then with Merrill, you seem to be ready to turn sooner rather than later. Is that correct?
Well, if you look, you'll see the turning point for the 2010 was right at the June 30th time period. I'm thinking maybe a little more toward middle of June, but just a lot of things that I keep looking at keep pushing me back to June. One of the things that's real simple is if you look back at the current declines, they've lasted roughly 33 months on average. Well, if you go from September 2012 to 2015, then back at off 3 months, boom, you're right in June. So, I guess I'm not saying it's going to be in the middle of June or right now, but I think a person needs to start preparing or planning to get something in place for a turn because I think we're getting close.
And, Jackie, I feel like you're not quite that far along on this process yet.
No, I'm not quite ready. I mean, you know, if you look at the lows that came in the December 2016 in June, we were looking at 343, and I don't see any reason why we may not go and revisit that. I think that, and the reason I say that, Todd, is because I look at the amount of corn that is sitting out in the countryside. You know, you talk to elevators, the selling has not picked up the way you would like to have seen it pick up. And I think that, you know, the trade in itself is going to keep that in the back of its mind. Now, if we come in this next week and we see the crop ratings go up higher than what they were last week on corn, I think the trade again will resume it. And now we've actually had 2 days this week where we're on a lower trade day. We've actually seen an increase in open interest, which would mean we're picking up more sellers. And so I just don't think we're there yet. But I've told my guys, I said, you know, I want to be short corn probably into the end of June and maybe even into July, depending upon how the weather goes. And then, you know, then we'll start to move forward. But if volatility starts to pick up, I'm with Merle. I think that in this range that we're in right now, if you are an end user, buying calls when volatility is low is the name of the game, and that's where we're at. And so I just am not quite ready to turn the corner at this stage. Maybe by the end of June when we know where, or the week before when they've already got it traded in, let's put it that way, whatever they think acreage is going to be. But my personal opinion is I think we could add acres to beans and corn both compared to what they told us in March. And if that's the case, then I could see the market even going lower. But the 343 area, I believe, would be a major holder at this point in time.
Mike, any final word from you?
Yeah, I think the best way to tie all this together, Todd, is what Jackie talked about, the current supplies being adequate, and that there's no doubt about that. But I think those same traders and people that believe that would dump that in a heartbeat if they saw the dollar turn back lower, because then they'd get off the idea that future demand is negative. And I think this goes back to the Federal Reserve. Why wouldn't the dollar rally after the Federal Reserve chairwoman said that it is appropriate to raise rates this year? I mean, that's a dollar bullish comment. when 3 days prior to that, they put an FOMC minutes statement out saying that they acknowledge the stronger dollar is hurting the U.S. economy. Look, they're getting ready for liftoff. Everybody's watching the Federal Reserve all around the world. Which is it going to be? And this is what the grain markets have to contend with. And to me, to oversimplify it, that's the whole reason why the 2010 could or may not happen, is that what does the Fed do? Because we didn't have this situation back in 2010. We've never had this situation for a liftoff from quantitative easing. So that's why the paper hedges, I think, are still worthwhile.
Oh, I think you're right, Mike. And you know, I think they didn't react to Yellen because of what Stanley Fisher came out and said. You know, he's the vice chairman of the Board of Governors. Granted, she's the head, but he's a voting member. And, you know, he talked about being prepared for spillover from a rate hike, which I think scared some of the investment money to the sideline.
I agree. They're just not getting clear signals, and the currency markets are showing that.
Yeah, you get that right. And, you know, he's talking about 3 to 4 years down the road having bank borrowing rates at 3.25% to 4%, and was pretty vocal about why is everybody so focused on this. And, you know, I don't know, Mike, I think you would agree. It seems like everybody's focused on when it's going to happen rather than how much it's going to be.
Well, you know, and that's where they have made the trade, I think, has made the assumption that it's not going to be any more than a half a point, and it's going to be almost definitely a quarter point. I think you're right. We haven't even visited that kind of thought process yet. We're still trying to figure out how Greece is going to pay back 1.5 billion euros between now and June 19th and what the next comment from the Fed's going to be. So, unfortunately, the wheat is caught right in the crosshairs of all that.
Big comment when you said no clear signals. I mean, you look at the economies, you look at the dollar, you look at stock market. About the only clear signal right now you have is in commodities for corn, beans, and wheat, and it's lower right now. But other than that, I don't see any clear signals to say, well, I can definitely say, well, yeah, the dollar's going up or going down. So I think that's the key right now.
Yeah, I do too, and I think though the they call the Greek exit the Grexit. Now they're talking about Britain. You know, the UK is going to take a vote as to whether they stay in Europe or not, and you know that is pretty scary. Now, you know, I don't think anybody in general, all the people I've read, like Germany and everybody else, they're all saying they think Cameron's going to do it only to appease the people. But at the same time, if Germany pulled out of the Eurozone, even though they still have, you know, they kept their own currency. But if Germany pulled out of if Britain pulled out of the Eurozone, it would definitely have an impact. And I think that could drive our dollar higher without having any rate raises going on over here.
And no, that's where it's got the dollar is the pig with the lipstick on it, essentially.
Yes, absolutely. No question about that. Good one, Mike.
Kiss me, baby. All right. Well, thank you all so much for being with us for this edition of Commodity Week. Any final word from you, Mike, before we let you go?
Talk to Lance Honig in Washington today, and the crop conditions for wheat and corn did not have the Memorial Day weekend factored in as far as heavy rainfall. So that's something to be watching on the next Monday report.
Merrill Crowley?
I'd have to agree. You're going to have to watch these condition reports to gauge whether the market wants to make a low or not.
And Jackie Vex.
Well, I would just like to emphasize be safe with all the rains that we have had and everywhere. You all remember that I have a client who had a son that was severely injured last year because he was in a hurry and he grabbed the wrong strap to pull a truck out. And his life is never going to be the same. Take your time and just be safe.
Our thanks today to our panelists, including Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities from Watseka, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.